It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Financials, the big banks really under pressure today following earnings this morning. Citigroup, Wells reporting, and of course JP Morgan. Creedy mentioning at the top overall, those bank earnings not so great. So let's get to it with Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Global Banks Analyst Allison Williams. She joins us on the phone in Summit, New Jersey. Allison, nice to have you here with Katie and myself. So let's get to it. I guess we should start with JPM, right? Because everybody wants to know what they do, what Jamie Dimon says. What do we need to be aware of?
Big news today, if you will, was the guidance for costs for this year, and that was much bigger than consensus had expected. Costs are increasing. We know that across the industry. We know that volumes are very good. With that becomes higher compensation, so that's a big driver. Back to work, normalization of T&E, that's also a driver, and then investment spending. Obviously, it's a very competitive environment. There's lots of emerging fintech competitors and competition broadly, and costs are going up perhaps 8 to 9% this year. So I think there's a lot of revenue indicators that people had been excited about coming into the quarter. Rates are going higher. That's a great thing, but the expense guidance was the new variable that we got today.
Hey, Allison, was it all about just compensation, or was it all also about CapEx? What was it?
It's compensation. It's normalization of T&E spending as the world begins to go back to work live, and it's investing. Investing, referring to spending on technology and keeping competitive on that front. JP Morgan is obviously a sizable firm, and they're spending across the firm. And I think what's important for investors is that, yes, the costs are going to be higher, but they're investing for the long term, and they're still going to be earning a return on tangible common equity, which is the key metric we look at. They're still going to be earning one of the highest ratios in the business, so perhaps a bit below their 17% medium-term target, but I think that's why JP Morgan is the company that is today, because it has been willing to invest in its franchise.
Allison, I'm curious to hear your perspective on trading revenue, because we did see a big drop off there. Jefferies earlier this week, then JP Morgan, Citi today, just to name a few. How much of that is just tough year-over-year comparisons versus actually there was a real slowdown here?
So it's more the former there, the tough year-over-year comparisons. Last 4Q was exceptionally strong for the industry. And so, the fact that we're only seeing you know, relatively modest declines against that for companies like JP Morgan and Citigroup, you know, I think is still a pretty solid result. Jefferies is a bit more volatile. Their quarter ends in November, not December. They were also way outperformed the bigger peers, sort of in the good times, and so we're seeing just a little bit of normalization there. And the on the you know, so trading, both equities and FICC trading were a little bit light. Equities trading outperforming, but fees were really the big story for the global investment banking business. That's a lot of what's feeding into the higher compensation. It's a talent-driven business. There is a war for talent going on out there, and fees were better than expected for both J.P. Morgan and Citigroup. We expect that's a great indicator ahead of Goldman and Morgan Stanley that we're getting next week. Goldman, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan are leaders in M&A and IPOs. Record year last year, great end to the year, and momentum coming into this year.
And, I mean, we're only halfway through, right? So if you look at today's tea leaves, what we saw today from, you know, some of the big reporters today, JP Morgan, Citi, Jefferies earlier, what does that portend for what we're going to come back to next week? Because I think we're looking forward to Goldman, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, the list goes on.
The figures that we have so far bode very well for the revenue side of Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, especially with regard to the strength in investment banking fees. Trading, as I said, might be a little bit weaker, but also the asset and wealth businesses, especially for Morgan Stanley, also going to come in benefit from very strong markets. Costs are going to be the thing that we're watching for both of those companies as well as for Bank of America. You know, on Bank of America, we're looking for loan growth as well as a key indicator. I would say that you know, investors were relatively bullish, especially with regard to some of the industry data. Bank of America is even more bullish, I think, than the industry. A lot of that relates to commercial and industrial. I think the numbers generally support that. The card is a little bit weaker for the big players, but the costs are going to be the key. If you have J.P. Morgan, who's sort of you know, the biggest out there, upping their spending by this degree, I would think it's hard. It's going to be hard for other companies not to also up their game.
All right. Going to leave it on that note. Hey, Allison, as always, appreciate your insight. She is Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Global Banks Analyst Allison Williams, joining us on the phone from Summit, New Jersey. And Katie, we're seeing a little pressure on those bank names today, but they've been running up higher this year so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a fantastic year, but JP Morgan shares down 6% today, Carol.
Yeah, that's quite a haircut. All right. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We are continuing, as Katie mentioned earlier, tracking those headlines when it comes to COVID. We have B of A pushing back its return to office for staff in the U.S. again until at least the fourth week of January. Katie, BP telling its employees at its largest U.S. office in Houston to work from home until next month due to those rising Omicron cases in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, those headlines coming hot and heavy, it almost begs the question, I mean, who hasn't pushed back the return to office date at this point? I'd love to know.
It's a really good point. Let's see what Dr. Ian Lusbader has to say. He's clinical professor of medicine over at NYU Langone. We check in with him every week, and he joins us on the phone in New York City. Dr. Lusbader, nice to have you here with Katie and myself. How are you? How are you feeling?
Much better. Thanks, Carol and Katie. A pleasure. Last week, yep, I was sick. I had thought perhaps I had COVID. I tested negative. But there are many other viruses going around, RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, flu. We don't really test for all of them, and we're seeing a ton of people call in either COVID positive or with symptoms that turn out to be negative. So people are in a bit of a panic, and many patients are saying, oh my gosh, what do I do? Is there some treatment for me? And unfortunately, there's a lot of limited treatment. A lot of what we have is really regulated by the state and limited to either elderly people or people with significant underlying medical problems. So people feel very frustrated.
And doctor, I am curious to hear your perspective on what the path forward looks like, because, you know, like I mentioned a minute ago, we did hear from Moderna co-founder today saying in a Bloomberg television interview that 2022 is going to be the year that this pandemic turns into an endemic. Would love to hear your thoughts on that. First of all, would that change our day-to-day life? And also, do you think that's a realistic timeline?
I do for both. I do think that this will turn into an endemic problem, which basically means COVID will be, Omicron will be like a seasonal flu. You know, we get hundreds of thousands of cases of flu every year, and unfortunately thousands of deaths from flu every year. You know, the flu vaccine helps. It's somewhat limited. It doesn't work 100%. I do think we're seeing really a plateau, and soon we will see a drop in the number of cases. Certainly in some areas we're seeing that already in the Northeast. So I think the number of Omicron cases and COVID cases will be dropping in the next few weeks. We still are seeing some hospitalizations and some deaths, but overall this does appear to be much more mild. And I think until we really are able to eliminate it, and we may not be able to do it, we will just have to live with it. And Omicron or COVID may be another seasonal coronavirus, and we have many coronaviruses that we test for in a nasal swab, a PCR nasal swab. It's called a respiratory panel. When people come in, they're sick, either in the emergency room, sometimes in local offices. We do that swab, and it tests for, you know, 10 or 15 different viral pathogens. And I think Omicron, and this will be another coronavirus that we'll be testing for, and hopefully we will have some antivirals like Tamiflu. Right now, a lot of the medications, like the IV monoclonal antibodies, Sotrovimab, very limited in amount. Paxlovid has a lot of drug interactions. So we really just offer people supportive care. And fortunately, most people do well, you know, hydration and mucus thinners and cough suppressants. So sadly, we don't really offer people a lot of magic bullets. Hopefully over the next year or so, we will get more effective therapies.
What is it, though, Ian, about, you know, we've been talking with you throughout the pandemic. I'm going to be fully transparent. I tested positive for a rapid test, and I'm at home. No symptoms so far. But I have to say, I had felt so lucky navigating up to this point, and it was real shocking to me. And I'm like, you know, what is it that, you know, I know you have said to us, everybody's going to get this. It's just the way it is. It's getting much more contagious. But it is still scary because you do talk to people who said, oh, it was nothing. And then there's other folks, younger folks, older folks, you name it, who say, yeah, I was knocked, you know, off my feet for a couple of weeks. You know, what is it about this virus that is still so tricky?
Well, many viral infections knock people off their feet. They do cause fatigue. You know, this, we don't really know all the details about this coronavirus. We certainly know the mutations. The real origins we've talked about, you know, are still a little muddy and murky. And so it's unclear if whether or not, you know, this was engineered in some way. But it's certainly a very effective virus. It's highly contagious. It's obviously mutated to be much more easily spread by people who have no symptoms. Hopefully you're young and healthy. Hopefully you'll have a pretty simple course. But you may have cough, sneezing, sore throat, laryngitis. Bad for an anchor to have laryngitis. But usually within 10 to 14 days, people will get over it. You should speak to your doctor. Some, you know, there are some people, if they have bad coughs, we'll give them a short course of steroids to decrease some inflammation. But most healthy people will get over it. If your people have underlying problems, that really puts them in a different risk group. And there are some therapies like monoclonal antibody, although it is very limited. It's regulated by the state. You can prescribe it. It has to go through a committee that has to screen people. But I think most people, you're a perfect example. You've done everything right. And if you look back over really a century, there are very few pandemics we've successfully dealt with. Smallpox took years, decades and decades of slowly getting everyone vaccinated. So I think it was unrealistic to think we could sort of jam everyone in with a vaccine that honestly is not totally effective, right? People have three shots, they still get Omicron. Yeah. So I think it was unrealistic without tremendous preparation, lots of masks, lots of tests, lots of treatment to think we could have really succeeded.
Well, we're glad to hear that you're doing okay, and I love you forever that you are calling me young and healthy, so I'm all in. Hey, be well. Dr. Ian Lusbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone, on the phone in New York City.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers, they're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIEFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We've talked a lot about the increasing legitimization of cryptocurrencies. We've seen that, Katie, safe to say, in a big way this past year, whether it's governments, officials, companies, you name it. Our next guest lived in Africa and Latin America for over a decade, worked on building out mobile payment platforms. She is former CIO of emerging tech over at GE Digital. Today, she's the founder and CEO of O Group. We are delighted to bring in with us Maya Vujinovic. She joins us on the phone in Miami. Maya, nice to have you here with Katie and myself, and I hope I got your name right.
Oh, absolutely. Such a pleasure to be on, and Happy New Year to both of you.
Well, Happy New Year as well. Tell us a little bit about your background, because I think, you know, Katie and I, we watch the established financial guys kind of playing catch up now with the crypto world, and for a long time they shunned it. It does feel like, you know, the emerging markets and disruption innovators, those folks were really ahead of the curve. Your experience in the emerging market world, how does that give you maybe a different perspective when it comes to the world of cryptocurrencies?
That's an on-point question and a very relevant one to what we are seeing today. When I started off in early 2000s, I went on to do payments in Africa, and then Latin America followed. That was at the same time when M-Pesa was starting. And now you're seeing this incredible reversal where actually Africa is leading in adoption of cryptocurrencies, even comparison to North America. So the perspective is absolutely different in the sense that I've lived there, I have paid employees, I've received my own salary in these things. And when you realize that the amount of money that it takes to actually pay the banking fees and cross-border payments and the difficulty of doing all of that, this is where I had my light bulb moment about Bitcoin. And when I received the Bitcoin white paper, I thought, if this happens, this would be unbelievable. And that was in 2009 and 10. So I have lived it. We've built some of these platforms in emerging markets. And when you actually see the amount of money that it takes and the difficulty for people to launch businesses, for people to get paid, for people to transfer money to their dear ones, it is absolutely an incredible solution. And no surprise that it's gaining such traction in emerging markets.
And Maya, when we talk about emerging markets, where do you see the most potential to integrate crypto when we talk about the different countries?
Yeah, sure. I think that's also an excellent question in the sense that there is a bit of a divergence. And what I mean by that is you will see regulation in some of these emerging markets really clamp down on crypto. We've seen it in Nigeria. We've seen it in Zimbabwe. We have seen it in some of the Latin American countries as well. But if you look at Brazil, if you look at Argentina, if you look at Venezuela, these are all countries where the currency, the local currency, fluctuates tremendously. And if you look at apps like, for example, Reserve, that is a stable coin in that is mainly in Venezuela, but across Latin America, it's currently being used. I think about $60 million of transactions monthly volume is being used currently to keep the stability of Bolivar while the currency fluctuates or depending on what happens with the U.S. dollar, right? Mm-hmm. In Africa, you're seeing a huge potential because obviously once, if you look at Nigeria, for example, right, which is the most populous country in Africa, it is full of extremely impatient youth, youth that is hungry for innovation. And when the oil supply goes down, right, and the dollar is actually, the dollar supply is squeezed out, many of the businesses are simply unable to pay foreign suppliers and lenders, right? And so this becomes a really big use case for countries like that as well.
Yeah, and let's dig into some of those use cases because, I mean, crypto, it's such a broad umbrella. People usually think just Bitcoin, but, I mean, we start thinking about cross-border payments, stable coins. I mean, what are some of the biggies here?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of them that I'm – so one simply can just be access to earning money, right, in a different way and access to some kind of a financial freedom. Yes, it comes with risk, because it is not regulated, it has huge fluctuations. So one could be just a massive umbrella, access to ability to earn money besides what your government is offering you. So you could, for example, there's another platform that is being launched very soon. It's called Toucan. It is a nature-based carbon token, right, that is linked to a verified carbon credit market, and it connects crypto capital to kind of a planet-positive projects around the world. What does this mean for emerging markets? It suddenly, Katie, means that folks can access a fractionalized version of a carbon market that is usually very tainted, that is only available to those that actually have a lot of money. It's a democratization of assets, right? And so you can now buy into something that you believe in, not just what your government or what the local news might be offering to you. So that's another example. You could end up using some of the crypto and lending against your crypto for a local currency to go and then take money for your local business, right? Mm-hmm, right. It offers a plethora of opportunities for people to do that.
Maya, you are full of information. You've got to come back and share some more with us because your perspective is obviously unique, especially when it comes to all your time you've spent in emerging markets. So we hope you do come back. Maya Vujinovic, she is the founder and CEO of Ogrip, joining us on the phone in Miami.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Folks, let's get to it. We've got just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up another wild week here in 2022, 2 weeks in. But we are near our best levels for the most part on our major equity averages. Carol Messer along with Katie Greifeld. Let's bring in our guest, Daryl Crate, Chairman and Managing Principal at Easterly Investment Partners. He joins us on the phone from Massachusetts. Daryl, how are you?
Oh, I'm well today, thanks. How about you guys?
Doing okay, trying to, you know, just watch the economic news, the Fed speakers, a lot going on. It does feel like markets are a lot more nervous than they were perhaps even at the end of 2021. Fundamentally, how do the markets look to you?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is this fundamental transition from growth stocks to value stocks as people fear the Fed. You know, this is beginning a theme that we're going to see probably for the next year or two. The 40-year bull party for bonds is over. Jerome Powell has turned the lights up, and he's asking everybody to leave. You know, with very low rates, investors are discounting earnings that are 20 years out in today's growth valuations, and we're seeing a shift to value.
And why should we believe that this shift to value, because, you know, we've seen some runs at this rotation a few times in the past 2 years or so, What makes this time different? Why would value stick around this time?
Oh, it's a great question. You know, and what is different this time is that we're going to see 3, 4, 5, 6 rate hikes, you know, over this next year. And what you saw in 2017, 18, 19, as the Fed took interest rates to zero, earnings for growth stocks were discounting earnings that were, again, 15 or 20 years out that were significant. And as that as those rate hikes go up, what you're going to see is those growth stock valuations declining, and that's going to have a permanent effect on the market.
So at this point, what would you recommend to investors that they do at this point? Because there's still a lot of questions out there, right? Safe to say, we don't have the playbook for exactly how we come out of this easily. Our Eric Schatzker catching up with Dr. Kaufman and really nervous about that we don't necessarily have a Fed out there right now, led by Jay Powell, that's going to maybe make the uncomfortable, aggressive moves that we need to really rein in inflation.
Yeah, I think you're right on it, which is, you know, our fear is that they don't move fast enough, and there's also a fear that they're going to overreact. So, you know, today, coming out of the pandemic, supply and demand imbalances are the source of the greatest risk. You know, they're the driver of both this real and transitory inflation. And how the Fed reacts is going to change the amount of liquidity in the economy through consumer purchasing power as well as the supply of credit. I think the recent good news we see is that Senators Sinema and Manchin have decided to be the designated drivers in Congress, and they're going to prevent officials from throwing more gas on the fire while the Fed is trying to get it under control and get us back to a time of great price stability.
I'd love to talk a little bit about that dynamic between fiscal and monetary policy because, I mean, with all those rounds of stimulus that we saw, fiscal policy was maybe it wasn't in charge, you know, in 2020 and 2021, but definitely had a big role to play. But at this point, I mean, do you think that monetary policy is really the dominant factor driving markets at this point?
Well, I think all of these things work together, you know, to create an economy. I mean, for the last 20, 30 years pre-pandemic, the economy became more and more refined with just-in-time processing, these very complicated supply chains that were able to meet demand in an instant. And the pandemic just threw everything afoul. So we need proper fiscal policy, we need monetary policy, and we just need the economy to get going. I mean, we need this pandemic to end. I think that seems like we are getting near with Omicron. If you look at, you know, we watch closely the RNA factor in wastewater in large metropolitan areas, and that in the last 2 days has declined materially. So, you know, as we see over the next week or two, that's going to work its way into the system, and we're going to get to hopefully what is a new equilibrium.
We've heard a lot from various Fed officials and other market watchers, Daryl, about the difficulty, though, of the Fed right now in terms of threading the needle and not making a policy misstep that leads us into a slowdown in growth. Is that likely? Do you think about a recession potentially next year or maybe getting into 2023?
I think if there's certainly an overreaction will cause recession. I mean, I think today, that's why finding companies with strong balance sheets, you know, that are favored in this market environment are really the way for equity investors to play this period. You know, as we look at these fourth quarter earnings and see how this is going to come together, I think material stocks and consumer discretionary stocks are going to do well. You know, in Q4, buyers wanted what they wanted, and when they saw it, they bought it. Markdowns for consumers that we've grown used to in the past, we didn't see it. So looking at stocks today like Kohl's, is a great place for investors to look, as well as anything that's selling into the home that's continued to be strong. Companies like Mohawk Carpet.
And Daryl, what don't you like right now when it comes to the markets?
I think you've got to be careful around banks. I mean, we're going to see. We saw some surprises this morning, but as you look forward, you know their ability to retain talent is going to be difficult. You see these large money center banks that work in large cities have had a real workforce issue. And as inflation is here, we all see it in the grocery store every day, paying 10, 15, 20% more for chicken, meats, the things that are on our table. You're going to see wage inflation, at these institutions that's 7 or 8%. They have not dealt with that in many, many, many years. So, their margins are going to be under pressure, notwithstanding that a yield curve is good for banks.
Right.
But you look at companies like Western Alliance,
right,
who are trying to reinvent themselves in a way, to address the new digital economy, which will help them.
All right. Really appreciate your time today. Daryl Crate, Chairman and Managing Principal of Easterly Investment Partners, on the phone from Massachusetts.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.